I'm Ed Adams, and you're listening to the AFCA Podcast. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the AFCA Podcast. And in this episode, we salute the amazing contributions of Executive Vice President for TriStar Television, Dr. Jennifer Turner. Now, I'll shed more light on this AFCA honoree after the break. The AFCA Podcast is sponsored by Morgan Stanley Global Sports and Entertainment. Every year, AFCA acknowledges members of the film and television industry during our annual Special Achievement Award Luncheon. Four honorees are chosen by a committee and selected over the basis of their achievements throughout the course of their career. They represent individuals both behind and in front of the camera, including executives, journalists, actors, craft artists, and filmmakers. Now, Executive Vice President of TriStar Television, Dr. Jennifer Turner, will receive the Salute to Excellence Award for her leadership and commitment to quality programming with an eye on inclusive casts and storylines. Dr. Turner has an incredible tenure in the industry that started at Disney, where over the course of her time there, she worked on such hit shows like Desperate Housewives, Lost, Grey's Anatomy, and My Wife and Kids. She then moved on to NBC Universal as Vice President of Drama Programming, where she helmed hit shows like Friday Night Lights, Crossing Jordan, and The Black Donnellys. Now, when she moved to Sony Pictures as Senior Vice President of Scripted Programming, Dr. Turner had continued to use her talent for visual storytelling for drama and comedy series, including The Blacklist, The Good Doctor, The Boys, and For Life. Recently, Dr. Turner was promoted to Executive Vice President for TriStar Television. And if that's not enough, she is the founder of Mad Cool Community and Mad Cool Fitness, an inclusive wellness program that empowers and promotes healthy lifestyles. Now, I was able to speak to Dr. Turner via Zoom recently about her career, her take on issues in the film and television industry, and about her passion project, Mad Cool.
Dr. Jennifer Turner, oh my God, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, my pleasure to be here, Ed. Thank you.
Okay, so going through my research, one of the things I thought was really interesting is that, you know, you have your BA and you even studied Japanese, if I got that right.
Yes, I actually do my Duolingo every night. I'm on a 137-day streak.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to pop my collar on that one.
I fail Babbel like every day. So
I have to say it's very effective when they're like, hey, Jennifer, this is Sari. Have you forgotten to do your language today? And I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to disappoint Sari. I better get in there. Anyway, so yeah.
I love it. And then you have your MBA and then you have your doctorate in public health. And so when you think about that arc and those different degrees, you're a VP at TriStar. Like,
I'm a nut.
Yeah, like how did you get into this industry?
Yeah, okay. So where to begin? Well, first of all, I'm 137 years old. That's why I have all those, how I'm able to have all those degrees, and I've had all these different careers, starting originally in investment banking many, many years ago, right out of undergrad. I thought I was going to be Gordon Gekko, which was hilarious. And now I make television shows. I think a couple of things around what you can sort of see in my background. I've always been curious. I've always tried to pursue my interests. I've always tried to grow. And so just going back to television specifically, I've always, you know, even though undergrad, I actually studied business, and my mother told me to, she encouraged me to, strongly encouraged me to get a degree in finance, because she's like, you need to learn finance, learn money so you can learn how to make some. So that was what she said to me. But even then, I've always been, there are multiple dimensions to my personality. So I am both artistic and you know, I guess numbers and business oriented. So left brain, right brain. And so growing up, actually, I played the violin, actually still play the violin. I had to run over and pick up my violin because I'm actually playing in a performance in a couple of weeks. But that's a whole other podcast, by the way. But I also was, you know, very business minded and analytical. And so anyway, you know, even though my mom told me to major in business and I very much enjoyed my time at Penn at Wharton undergrad, I always felt like I was fundamentally a creator, a creative person. Now, I didn't really know what a creative executive was. I didn't even know that those jobs existed, but I knew that I liked to make things. And so part of the reason why I transitioned from finance to going back to business school was that I wanted to not just work in finance which is a little more transactional. You're moving money from one place to another to help a business fund their operations. I actually wanted to build a business. And at the time, I didn't really, I didn't know about a creative role within the television industry, but I knew I liked entertainment. I watched a ton of television. I grew up in the first sort of golden age of television. I had this artistic side of me playing the violin and I used to dance. And so part of the reason why I went back to business school was to reinvent myself and sort of expand as someone who could go into the entertainment industry, really on the business side, and help to grow a business within a large media company. So that was kind of how I sort of made the transition to even getting on a television track. And then after business school, after a brief stint, because I went to Stanford, so I was in the Bay Area, and after a brief stint starting a .com that blew up, this was like the first, you know, .com boom bust in 2000, 2001, I refocused my efforts on like, how do I get into television? And that's how I packed up at this point, I went from I was going to be a .com millionaire to I can't pay my student loans. And I remember I was living in the Bay Area and I was looking around at the competitive landscape. There was such a glut of really incredibly overqualified MBAs who also had tech backgrounds. And I literally barely knew what a server was. And so I was like, I need to go someplace where people are going to think I'm smart and different. I'm like, I'm going to go to LA. So I packed up my stuff. And I remember this was the summer that Destiny's Child, I'm a Survivor, was playing on the radio. And I was living in San Francisco and I was driving down to LA and I was doing informational interviews. I'd come down, do interviews, drive back up to the Bay Area. And I, you know, I'd hit that horrible spot on the 5 where there's like the meat packing thing. It was horrible. And I was listening to I'm a Survivor. And eventually I got a job working for Disney in the ABC Cable Networks group on the business side. And then from there I was able to, so I kind of came in on something that I was qualified to do. And then from there I was able to make the transition to the creative side. And part of the reason why I made that transition and was able to make that transition, first of all, somebody gave me a break. Brian Franz was running ABC Daytime at the time. And he thought I was smart and he was looking for new someone who wasn't actually from ABC Daytime Soaps to come in and have a different perspective on ABC Daytime. So he gave me a break. But part of the reason why I proactively sort of sought it out was that my goal at the time was to actually run a cable network. And I looked at who was running cable networks. And they, at that point, the heads of networks almost exclusively came from programming, some marketing, but really heavily in programming. So practically speaking, that was my plan. But then also, I felt like I was more creative. I really felt like that was my, really kind of spoke to me, was more organically me. And I literally had no idea what being a creative executive was. So I went over to ABC Daytime and I covered Soaps, General Hospital in Port Charles, where we had, you know, vampires like Run Into the Woods and Who's the Father of the Baby and People Falling Down the Stairs, all that kind of stuff. But that's actually how I was able to transition to creative. And that was sort of this big leap. And then from there, I was able to move. I got promoted. I moved to primetime current programming at ABC and covered Lost, Desperate Housewives, and Grey's Anatomy. Then moved from there to the studio at NBC Universal, where I did drama development and drama current. And then from there, I actually moved to New York. I wanted to do something different. That was all in LA. I wanted to do something different, again, to stretch, and went to work for Bravo and Oxygen under Lauren Zelaznik, specifically focused on creating revenue generating partnerships. So taking the Top Chef brand and expanding that brand into frozen food and cookware and wine and Real Housewives yoga pants. And so I think just to kind of stop and sort of refocus, there's a reason why I took you down that whole lane. I think the key thing with that, with all of my different moves, was one, I was never, I was kind of bold and I did things that I didn't necessarily know how to do, but I was kind of like, I'm going to get in there. And when I get over there, I'm going to figure it out. And I always, again, was very, have always, and I still try to be very just intellectually curious and to do things that, I'm sort of notoriously comfortable with being uncomfortable and, really, putting myself in positions where I can learn and grow and stretch. And so then that's how the whole like MBA to television sort of happened. And then separately, the other sort of parallel narrative in my life was that I really had an interest in health and fitness. This was really born out of my own personal story. I used to be an overweight kid from the South Side of Chicago with really bad asthma. And I unfortunately developed an eating disorder when I was 13 and struggled with that from the time I was 13 until I was 24. And it wasn't until I went to Stanford for grad school that I decided that I really wanted to not only get my degree, but I really needed to focus on my health. And so by focusing on my behavior, behavior change, developing coping skills, having the support of some of my classmates, having access to a gym that was right in our dorm, I was able to develop healthy habits. And so from there, next thing you know, I was doing marathons and triathlons, did an Ironman triathlete. And so fast forward many years later, I was living in East Harlem at the time, and I could see the obesity problem that was happening there. And I felt really compelled as someone who was a formerly overweight kid from South Side of Chicago, who had now sort of crossed over to the other side and had not only experienced health benefits not only had my life changed specifically in terms of being directly healthy, I also got such a sense of empowerment that really was a halo effect over the rest of my life. So I could see the benefits of being healthy even in my professional career. So part of the reason why I went back to school and got my doctorate is that my whole philosophy, and when I founded my company, Mad Cool Fitness, like it's mad cool, it was all about health empowerment and behavior change. And I felt like in order for me to be really effective in my program design for both communities and people around behavior change, I should go back to school and actually get a doctorate in it. So that was fun, doing a dissertation and all that. And so I think when you kind of look at, you know, all the different things that I've done, again, I have been comfortable with being uncomfortable. I've always been curious, intellectually curious, and I like learning and, you know, being somewhat a little bit fearless. Some of that might have been youthful hubris. But being able to say, you know what, I don't necessarily know how to do this thing exactly right now, or it's going to be a difficult transition, but I'm going to put myself out there and I'm going to stretch and continue to grow. So you ask me one question and I give you like a whole thing.
That was the best answer, by the way. It was the best answer. So I'll take it.
So I'll just say, so growing up, because I think this was one of the questions that you might ask me, my favorite show was actually, wait for it, The Golden Girls. And
what?
Yeah, I'm serious. It was The Golden Girls.
Okay.
It was The Golden Girls. I mean, there are many other, you know, of course I grew up watching The Cosby Show and A Different World, and there's like many, many other shows. The Golden Girls was like my favorite show, and I actually used to keep it on while I was like writing my dissertation in the background. They were like my friends. But the reason why I say that is because I think the Sophia Petrillo picture at Sicily 1945 or whatever, like that's how I tell stories, just like her.
I love it. They were like writing your dissertation with you.
Thank you for being a friend. I was like, help me write this.
Okay, we can go down that road. All right, so talk to me. I mean, you just kind of mentioned a lot of things, but there was something that kind of stuck out to me when you were talking about the Golden Girls, actually, and the shows that you like and what you know, and that it made me start thinking about another question, which is, what do you look for? What are some of the ingredients that you feel make up a successful television show?
Well, first of all, it starts with, you have to have an amazing script. It starts with writing. And I think just to break that down, having emotional connection, right? So having characters that are deep and layered, that are relatable, that you can connect with. I think also some of the best shows also have a thematic component. Like your show is about, it may be about superheroes, but it's really about the human condition. There's something else that is, there's a message in what you're trying to say. So your show works on a few different levels. So great characters. And then obviously you have to have great plot, but with plot, it really should come from character, and really also kind of going back to those higher things around theme, what is your show trying to say? What is the mission statement of your show? What thematically are you trying to dramatize? And then you build up from there, right? So who are the characters that kind of reflect those themes? What situations do you need to put them in to further dramatize those things? And then things need to happen in your show, and it needs to move and really draw the viewer in. And especially now in such a competitive landscape, there's so much television, it's a streaming world, how do you really propel somebody through that narrative? How do you take them on that journey? And so it is very, very difficult to do. Good writing, a lot of people think that they can write, and same thing like with runners, like everybody thinks that they can be a runner. And yes, everybody can be a runner. You put on your shoes, you go out there and run, but can you run well? And can you write well, right? And so it's really, when I work with newer writers, one of the things that I really tell them is like, first of all, really figure out like, what are you trying to say with your show? And then spend an enormous amount of time on your characters. Make them very specific, make them very layered, because it's from there that then you can start to figure out what situations you want to put them in, what you want that plot to be, what you want that incident to be. The audience is incredibly sophisticated now. And it's never a good thing if your audience is ahead of your show, the characters in your show. So just being very mindful of, it's a very sophisticated audience, and, making sure that you are, like I said, pulling them in and surprising them.
One of the things that I think a lot about when you think about programming today, there's a glut of it. There's a glut of content.
There's a lot of programming.
It's a lot. With people, how they ingest so much content, not just from television, but from their phones and from streaming services and media. It's like, how do you feel traditional television has to respond to the fact that people do get content from all these new media sources?
Well, I mean, we certainly look at some of these media sources like podcasts, YouTube, like we look at other places, as potential starting places for development. But I will say, so that's one thing, like knowing that content is everywhere and ideas can come from everywhere. And you, for the most part, cannot, take something that's like on YouTube or TikTok or whatever, and like it becomes, it's a television show. Like there's a lot that has to be done in terms of development. Tying back to some of those things that I was just talking about around character and theme and all that stuff. But I think the other thing that I think is important, in addition to just kind of being aware of the fact that we are living in a multiple platform content universe, is people, how people are watching television now too. So people are watching television, but they're also on their phones and stuff. You know, they're on their computers, they're like doing multiple things. So I think that also kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about pulling an audience in like immediately. And because it's just very, very easy for people to get distracted by these other devices and things that are going on. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to ask this question because I should have asked this question first. Can you describe what the responsibilities of your job are?
Like, what do I actually do all day? I watch television all day. I watch television, I eat snacks. I mean, it's like, it's great. No pressure, no stress. It's super chill. So I run TriStar Television, and it is a development and sales role, which basically means we develop new television shows and sell them to different platforms. We primarily focus on streaming platforms, so your Apple's, Amazon, Netflix, Hulu. We are the boutique label within Sony Pictures Television. And in the largest independent studio, and we sell to everyone. And so specifically with the TriStar, let me talk a little bit about TriStar and the TriStar brand. So TriStar and Television is the same brand really as TriStar Features. And we are really trying to, at TriStar Television, we are trying to tell bold stories, new stories from diverse perspectives. We are not only championing underrepresented voices, but underrepresented stories that you haven't seen before, or maybe it is a story that you've seen before, but it's told from a different perspective. We are really trying to lean into our cinematic roots in terms of execution, so very high quality. We are really becoming more curated in our slate. So we want a big tent in terms of we want to be diverse and inclusive and tell many different types of stories, but we're also trying to be focused and intentional in doing that. And because we are the boutique label within Sony Pictures Television, we are more producerial, more hands-on, doing fewer projects, but really trying to get behind those projects in a big way. So we, in terms of actually what the actual mechanics of that is, we license IP, like we look at books and podcasts as sort of underlying source material. We then try to pair that material with a writer, with a producer. Sometimes we attach talent, sometimes we attach a director. We can then commission a script and take that out try to sell that to the network as a spec script. Or we do things called if-come pitches, meaning we put together on the front end, we sort of decide all the business terms so that when it's bought, all that stuff has been predetermined. But we go out and we pitch that idea to a buyer. And it's a very well thought out pitch. So thinking through not only the pilot story, but what season one would look like, what multiple seasons would look like. If we don't have casting attached to it, we may in our deck, in our presentation, you know, put some images in there of different actors just so that the buyer and the listener, as they're listening, can start to kind of see what this world and the show would look like. And so that's what we do. And then we hopefully get these shows sold. And now we're living in a world where things are mostly, especially with the streamers, are direct to series. Not so much, you know, doing pilots anymore. And then we get into production and, you know, hopefully have it on the air, not just for one season, but for multiple seasons. So I kind of glossed over when I was talking in my opening remarks, I was talking about what I was doing in current programming. So current programming is actually the next phase in the sort of life cycle of a television show. Once it's a show is developed and sold to a network and it gets into production, usually it's then handed over to what is called our current programming department, which basically is what it sounds like, people, creative executives who are working on shows that are currently on the air. And that job, which I've done that for many years, you're really kind of like a product manager where you sit in the middle of all these different elements that go into the making of the show. Your job primarily is the creative. So working with the writers and the producers on the creative, the scripts, the casting, booking directors, but you're also interfacing with business affairs and legal, physical production to make sure that the creative is syncing up with the physical production. So in my current development role, we don't just sell the show and then hand it over to Current and we're like, deuces, good luck with that. We actually stay on board to shepherd it through. And then at some point it will fully transition over to the Current programming department and they will run with it. So that's what I do.
See, that is so much more than snacks.
So much more than snacks.
But you did touch on something and we've kind of glossed around a little bit, and I want to talk about it a little bit more later. But one of the things that I'd like to know and would love for you to kind of expand on a little bit is, why do you personally feel that we need more diversity and inclusion on television today?
Because I'm glad you're asking this question. Television and filmmaking is about people. We are commenting on the human condition. And if we only tell certain types of stories, we're only commenting on a small percentage of the human condition and of the population. It's also, there are a couple other thoughts about this. One, if you only have one show about Black people or Asian people or Indian people, that becomes the show that is representative of entire people, which is, of course, ridiculous, right? So we need to have multiple shows, again, to reflect the society that we live in. You know, we're now in the second golden age or whatever of television. It's, you know, so much content, so many different platforms that need content, which is great because they are also speaking to all these different audiences. So it is also important for us. There's a huge opportunity now. There's more opportunity to tell these different types of stories. There's more outlets. There are more places for people to consume content. So it's really, really important that we are able to serve audiences that are out there looking for content that reflects them, that connects to them, that is emotionally resonant for them. And not only is it the right thing to do, but it has literally been proven time and time again that it is big business. It's the commercially right thing to do, in addition to being the ethically and morally right thing to do. So, you know, I think that this is, you know, we have come a long way. There have definitely been some many advancements, but there's still a long way to go because there does still seem to be a bias of, well, we can only have one of those. Well, it's like, no, why does it only have to be one? We could have a lot, right? There isn't just one show on television about, you know, non-diverse people, white people. We need many different types of shows to reflect the society that we live in so that we can emotionally connect with audiences.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. One of the things I was going through your resume, which is amazing, it really is. But one of the things I was looking at your LinkedIn profile and I'm reading your about section and you had this really awesome line.
Oh my God, what did I say?
You said, I'm about empowerment.
Yeah.
And I wanted you to talk to me about, what does empowerment mean to you personally and in your career? But if you can, also talk to me about, how does that empowerment and what type of advice do you give young executives who are coming into this industry?
Yeah, so when I talk about empowerment, I'm talking about a sense of self, a sense of personal agency, a sense of that you can be the person that you were designed to be, that you can be fully actualized. And when I talk about, so, you know, when I talk about empowerment in health, that's my company, Mad Cool Fitness. What I'm attempting to do there in my programming and with the brand is to help people, to give them the tools so that they can develop health empowerment, a sense of, I can be healthy. I can do this healthy thing. I can figure out how to, you know, exercise, how to eat well. I can be in control of my health and, to a certain extent, my destiny through good health. When I talk about empowerment in storytelling, which ties back to like my current position at TriStar, I'm talking about giving voice and a platform to people, to perspectives that may not have had that perspective before. So I think it is part of being empowered is also part of being seen and heard and respected. And a lot of that also comes first, not only from, you know, external recognition and validation, but you yourself respecting yourself and feeling strong and able and capable. So I would say, you know, for young people, and that's what I'm trying to do, whether it's at, you know, through Sony or through my company. I think that really my goal in life, and hopefully many, 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 many years from now, when I'm like old and wrinkled and looking like one of the golden girls, tied it all back, that I can look back and say that I help people to ultimately be the best version of themselves. And to also, if it's an artist, you know, helping an artist to get their chance and get their voice and their creativity on television. I also work with schools around health and health education. So, and I'm a huge, as you can see from my resume and all that, like I come from a family of educators. We believe in education. I believe in education. I think education is the great equalizer. If you can give somebody a great education, that obviously helps them so much in terms of their income generating opportunities and their health. You know, one of the social determinants of health is education. And so I would say, so many, many years from now, I hope that I can look back and maybe somebody will say this about me, that I was actually able to help them realize their own empowerment. For young people starting, I would say you should be bold. You should be fearless. First of all, when you're young, you got time. You can mess up and you can start over. So there's pretty much, you know, unless you like end up, you know, you do some horrible felony, there's pretty much no fatal errors. And even if something may seem like a mistake career-wise or a misstep, there's always an opportunity to learn and to grow, and you can get something from that opportunity. So I would say be bold, be fearless. Don't just stay in the gig that you're comfortable with or do the thing that you're comfortable with. You know, stretch, you know, I would say, but be intentional, because every move that I made, I wasn't quite sure how it was going to turn out, but I made that move really kind of thinking it through. Like, what am I trying to do? Where am I trying to get to? How does this sort of fit into my overall plan? Now, your plan may change, and my plan certainly did change over the last 20 plus years. But I didn't, situations didn't just happen to me. I happened to them. Like, I was the driver of things. And by the way, then sometimes the universe sends you curveballs and you just got to kind of rock with it, right? And things may go left when you're trying to go right. And then you just have to be resilient. I would say, you know, talk to people who are in the industry. You know, if you have alumni networks through school, work that alumni database, reach out to people. That's how I was able to get into my first job at Disney, was working that alumni database. Like, get in that database, you know, see if you can get informational interviews with people, see if you can potentially do an internship for somebody. Also LinkedIn, we didn't have LinkedIn. Yeah, I'm from the Flintstones era, right? But now you can get on LinkedIn, you can be like searching and you can, this person links to this person, links to this person. I can't tell you the number of people that have reached out to me to say, hey, I noticed that so-and-so is in your network. Would you introduce me to that person? And of course, sometimes I'm like, in my network? I forgot they're in my network. But anyway, the point being, be bold, like do that outreach, you know, sometimes, and by the way, sometimes you need to do the outreach many times before somebody will follow up with you. And not because people are trying to be, you know, not because people don't like you. It's just that people are busy and they just, maybe they missed your email the first time or your chat or whatever. I'd also say, you know, be a student of the business, be a student, period. Constantly read, learn, ask questions. It's just a part of, I think learning is just definitely a part of growth. And even if, you know, you may not necessarily know exactly how a piece of information or exactly how a skill will fit in today, that's okay. Get it. That'll be just another, you know, skill set that you'll have down the road that can potentially serve you.
That was
anything else insightful to say? Oh, and use moisturizer. Start with moisturizer early. That is my gift to you.
I need
and sunscreen.
I should have listened to that like 15 years ago.
That is my gift to you.
Okay, we have a couple of minutes left, so I would love for you to talk to me about MadCool. The community and the fitness, because just reading and going to the website and going through your Twitter and your Instagram.
Oh my God.
There's so much positivity, first of all. You are truly a positive person.
Thank you.
I would love to know more, and I would love for people to know more about this.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, where to begin with MadCool? So first of all, fun fact, MadCool was actually going to be called Get It Girl. Yes, work with me on this. And I remember this was years ago. MadCool has been my passion project on the side for years. And I remember I had talked to my lawyer about it. And she was like, yeah, here's the thing. She's actually French. And I'm not even going to attempt to do a French accent because I'll mask it. But she was like, Jennifer, it's taken. It won't clear. And I was like, get it. My Get It Girl won't get got. I was really like bummed. And I'll never forget. So I was at this conference. It was like a women's African American women's leadership conference, I think down in Florida. And she had just told me that my Get a Girl thing wasn't gonna happen. And I remember there was a Beth Ann Hardison, Kadeem Hardison's mother, was, you know, being honored, and they just did a whole package on her where a bunch of models were talking about her, what she had meant to them. And Beth Ann she's a hoot. I mean, she's such a trailblazer in the world of modeling. And anyway, so she comes up and she's giving her speech and she goes, you know, thank you, thank you, thank you. I really appreciate it. You know, I've done a lot of things, you know, for a lot of people, and I've done a lot of things in my life, but hopefully in the end, they will say she's mad cool. And I was like, oh my God, that's it. And so then like I go and I get it clear, blah, blah, blah. And mad cool, the reason, the spirit behind it was that I was, and even with the Get It Girl, was that I was trying to find something that felt active, that felt like empowerment, that really felt like the way I felt when I crossed the finish line of my first marathon now 22 years ago, whatever. And it was such a sense of, like, especially for me, because I'd had such a a bumpy health journey with the asthma and the bulimia and all that stuff. When I crossed that finish line physically, I also crossed it metaphorically. I had done something that I didn't think I could do, I did not think was possible. And so I wanted the word Mad Cool. I wanted the name of my company to kind of reflect that. So Mad Cool Fitness specifically focuses on, as I mentioned, health empowerment through behavior change. So I do health coaching. I've worked with many different community organizations over the years and individuals around helping them to learn how to be healthy. Because one of the things that I felt was super frustrating as a person who had struggled with weight was that it always seemed like, you know, the diet and fitness industry were just, you know, telling you to do this thing or that thing, and then you'd just be healthy. Like, this is the answer. Like, this is the answer. No, this is the answer. No, this is the answer. And it was just a lot of like failure, a lot of setting yourself up for failure, because the key thing that isn't in those most diet programs and exercise programs is you. Because at the end of the day, you know, not to, now I'm going to quote one of my favorite movies, The Last Dragon, where Timac has been searching. Yep, I'm going all the way there. So where Timac spends the whole movie looking for the dragon, and after showing up is like dunking his head in the water. For you young people out there, you just have to Google this, you know, dunking his head in the water. And then on the last dunk, and he pulls his head up and he's like, who is the master? And he's like, I am. And he has like the glow. It's amazing. The answers actually lie in you. You cannot have a health program. You can't have a fitness program unless you incorporate your thoughts, your beliefs, your culture, how you perceive, how your culture can either be an impediment or helping you to be healthy. You can't, again, going kind of using my doctorate from a social ecological perspective, like your environment affects how healthy you are, where you live, your access to healthy foods, your access to green open spaces to engage in physical activity, economics. These are things that all have to kind of be taken into account as you are developing what I call a healthy lifestyle system that works for you. And so because I had gone through 20 something years of failing, I wanted people to succeed. I wanted to give them real tools that would help them to be healthy, really from a psychological and behavioral perspective, to be healthy no matter what. And so my definition of Mad Cool Fitness is actually unconditional empowered fitness. You engage in healthy behaviors no matter what. No matter if it's raining outside, if it's snowing outside, the sun is shining, somebody steps on your baby toe, something else pops off, you stay true to your mission of being healthy. So I've created a system that actually helps people to do that. And it's interesting because similar to me and my health journey, once you become mad cool in terms of fitness, it actually permeates other areas of your life because you bring that mad coolness into your presence and stature in business. So for example, like, you know, I would be out running, doing marathons, blah, blah, blah. And then I come into a situation where potentially I'm the only, certainly the only Black woman of color, maybe the only Black person in the room, but I felt like such a sense of self and empowerment from these, from my other accomplishments in fitness, that I felt perfectly comfortable in command of myself in those situations. So to me, it's not a part of the whole mad cool concept is that it really isn't just about fitness per se. It really is about your overall empowerment. I hope I answered your question.
No. Yeah, but that was spot on. And I absolutely love it. So I can't thank you enough for taking time to talk to me about this. And congratulations on the Salute to Excellence recipient. I think that is amazing. First off, I got to add one more word to this. Chiro.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Appreciated it.
That was Dr. Jennifer Turner, Executive Vice President with TriStar Television and AFCA Salute to Excellence Award recipient. Now, if you'd like to know more about our honorees, please visit the AFCA website. And if you'd like to know more about Dr. Turner's amazing organization, Mad Cool, I recommend you visit their website at madcoolfitness.com. And that's our show. Thanks again to Dr. Jennifer Turner and her amazing team for making this happen. AFCA has a ton of programming in the works, and you can stay up to date on our latest videos, events, panels, screenings, and more by visiting our organization on social media. You can find AFCA on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, too. So until next time, keep your head up.